Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon. This is Friday. It's September 30th, 2022. And that means it's coming up. Now I see 10. Everybody's doing these dress-up stuff, but I think Halloween is coming. But anyway, let's start the show by talking about secrecy.
The first public references to an extraterrestrial organization visiting Earth were made in 1952 by the famous contactee George Van Tassel. Today, that space-based organization is widely known as the Ashtar Command, eponymously named after its alleged leader, Commander Ashtar. Ashtar, along with numerous subordinates and other extraterrestrials of unspecified affiliation, established a direct telepathic communication link with Van Tassel. At the time, Van Tassel was the owner of a private airport at Giant Rock, California. Earlier in his career, he had worked as a mechanic for 22 years in the aviation industry for major companies such as Douglas Aircraft, Howard Hughes, and Lockheed Aircraft. His contact experiences began in the early 1950s with telepathic messages, and he later had his first physical contact in 1953 with an extraterrestrial called Solganda. Van Tassel is best known for organizing the Giant Rock conventions that began in 1954 and continued until 1977. These were huge UFO conventions, the largest UFO meetings ever held, which took place at Van Tassel's airport home in the Mojave Desert. Impressively, he would get up to 11,000 people coming to each of his Giant Rock conventions. All the leading UFO researchers and contactees of the time went to these groundbreaking conventions, whose rapid growth in popularity greatly disturbed public authorities. The FBI in particular went to great lengths to tarnish Van Tassel and Giant Rock Convention supporters, branding them as communist sympathizers plotting to overthrow the U.S. government. Freedom of Information Act documents confirm the FBI's involvement. An August 4, 1954 report by an unnamed FBI special agent declared, quote, "The saucer groups appear to be another means of raising funds for the Communist Party. When chosen by the Communist Screening Group, members would be given further indoctrination. A very conceivable place to clear them would be through such a place as Giant Rock Airport, located approximately 15 miles northwest of Joshua Tree, California."
Yeah, I thought I would start out with that because it gives the people who don't have the history of UFOs in this country for the last 70 years, I guess that could be the surprise acknowledgement to them that here's this guy has meetings of 11,000 people way back in 1951, 52, 53. Do you remember his name or some of the stuff he talked about?
Yes, I remember the name, but of course I don't know anything about these meetings because I was nowhere near America at that time. I was just coming out of high school. So it's somewhat before my time, plus it's before I ever came to America. So I really know nothing about what he was doing. But he certainly sounds as if he had something going on. And that was the period when first it was soon after Commander Byrd, Admiral Byrd, had done his thing with the poles, flying over the poles, and the inner Earth thing was being talked about. And spaceships were being seen, the little round ones that fly about that are really off planet Earth and were just flying around. So this was right at the beginning. And I think there was a lot of global hysteria. I remember it in the newspapers, you know, sightings here and sightings there. And I really do think there was a lot of hysteria going on at the time about it. And we also need to remember that at that time in history, televisions were not common. So everything was left for people's imaginations. And, you know, we remember what happened with Orson Welles and his broadcast, The War of the Worlds. People actually went crazy and committed suicide because of a radio broadcast, because there was nothing they could see. There was nothing tangible that they could get hold of. So I can understand if somebody was setting up a group and saying, come here and we'll discuss the UFO phenomena, that thousands of people would have gone to something like that. I don't think they would then. And indeed, the annual conferences run by MUFON, which is probably the most international and largest group of U.S. civilian UFO followers in the world today, their annual conferences rarely pull more than somewhere between 200 and 400 people. That's really a good conference for them in this day and age, because the phenomena of UFOs is that it's no longer a phenomena. Probably every 10th person that you meet would say, oh yes, I've either seen one, or I've heard of them, or I know somebody who's seen one. So they're pretty common, I think, today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say yes and no. I would say that, in my opinion, as I talk to people talking about the UFO situation and Penny God release of the Tic Tac thing they did a couple of weeks ago, and I need to get the congressional hearing that was done when Senator Rubio said he was going to hold a hearing to investigate this in the month of August. I haven't pulled that up yet, but I need to do that. But I really believe that you are right saying that more people are more aware now that there's a possibility that UFOs exist, entities mm-hmm. from other places in the planet. But still, I think it's a big mystery, and it's so much material. I mean, don't you come up with a lot of, super duper ideas about UFOs, different alien species, and what they are doing on planet Earth? Do you get that impression?
Yes, I think that is true. I think what we need to be looking at now is exposing truth as opposed to imagination. We need to actually be getting information out there, because I think putting the truth out at this point in history is very, very important. You know, the first truth is that the round ships, the saucer-shaped ships that everybody has seen pictures of in newspapers and televisions and videos and on YouTube over the last 20-odd years, that's been very common. The vast majority of those ships are not spaceships in the sense that they travel between the stars. They can, some of them, be used within a solar system. And this is a very important definition, because within a solar system, you use an entirely different method of propulsion for a ship than you do outside the solar systems in deep space. In other words, there are many suns with planets going around them in spiral galaxies and various other galaxies all over the universe. And then there is deep space, which are the vast distances measured in light years between those systems. So within the systems, you use a certain kind of propulsion for your vehicle. Between the systems, when you're traveling light year distances in deep space, you use a different kind of propulsion. So what I'm saying is that these small round craft, which are commonly known to everybody and which became known because of their shape as flying saucers way back in the time this man was talking about in the 50s, right? At that time and right up to the present, we call them UFOs or flying saucers. Those ships are not capable of interstellar travel. They are probably capable of getting as far as maybe the moon or Mars. Right, but they are not spaceships. They are within solar system ships only. And the vast majority of them, I venture to say at least 80% of them, come from the Earth. They do not come from outside or away. They all come from the Earth, from bases that are operated by the U.S. government, by all the major governments of the world practically. There's certainly the industrialized one, but the biggies are Russia out of Siberia and the United States out of various bases that we have. And then by the Pleiadians. They are a big player right now with a huge presence on planet Earth, predominantly the main one that we know about through the very great research and recording of Dr. Michael Sala. They are predominantly in their main base under Antarctica, and also the reptilians, who are also under Antarctica with the Germans in their big bases under the Antarctic region. So those are the predominant locations. You then have the other locations, a few of them, the main one being under Lake Titicaca in Peru, which were the leftover bases from the time of the Anunnaki, when they left 4,000 years ago, when they vacated this planet. They did leave some of their Ijiji, their astronauts, with a base under Lake Titicaca. And so far as I know, it's still there. Whether it's still in use, I presume it is, because it's a well-known spot for seeing ships going in and out. So over the Peruvian airspace, these ships are often seen. So the majority of those which we see are from this planet and from a variety of extraterrestrial groups. And some of them live actually full-time on this planet. Others are visiting groups which are using these small saucer-like ships to come down from big ships that they have parked out in orbit somewhere, and they use them as landing craft to go up and down to the planet, and which are here a long time. They have their own bases like Dulce or Nome, Alaska, or various places around the planet where they keep their bases and numerous small craft that they can travel with over the surface of the planet or on and off maybe to the moon base or somewhere like that where they're going. But these are not spacecraft. And it's really important if you see one landing in your backyard, for heaven's sake, don't go on running out and jump on board. Find out who it belongs to first, because the majority of them, without question, I would say, belong to the government, the reptilians, the Germans, and the Pleiadians. And what bothers me about the Pleiadians, because they offer to all the people who speak for the Pleiadians and for all the people they seem to cooperate and work with on the planet, they appear to be a well-intentioned group of beings who have Earth and humans' best interests at heart and are doing their best to help humans. And they offer a very, very spiritual message, all about, you know, the spiritual life. So it sounds really, really good, right? And there may be a lot of truth in it. But I question it big time, because their main connection and their main inroads to this planet came about prior to World War II, when they provided Hitler with the technology to develop his rocket bombs, which is the foundation technology of the rocket ships that exist today. It's the same technology. And it came originally from the Pleiadians through a psychic group led by a lady called Maria Isaac in the mid-1930s, 1938, 1936, this period, when she and her group were in contact or contacted by a Pleiadian group and gave them the technological information for designing and building rockets that were the foundation of the V-bombs that Hitler used to bomb the Western world and particularly England with during World War II. Spiritual message, because that doesn't seem like a very spiritual foundation to me. But they also were moving in with the side in World War II, in other words, Hitler and Germany. There is no question that the German army at the beginning of World War II was the greatest army this planet has seen since Roman times. There has never been the German panzers were an incredible force. If the Americans had not been attacked in Pearl Harbor by the Japanese, and that brought the Americans into the war and expanded the Lease-Lend Act to Britain, because remember, Britain was fighting Hitler for two years before America came into the war. If America had not been brought into the war through that invasion by Japan on Pearl Harbor, there is no doubt that Hitler would have won World War II and that he would now be ruling the whole of Europe, because he had the biggest army this planet has seen and the best trained, the best equipped. And it was primarily technologically equipped by the Pleiadians. It was the Pleiadians who gave Hitler all that technology, that gave him the super rocketry that enabled him essentially to be the future world master. So they were backing Hitler. And we all know what Hitler was like. We all remember the stories of the Holocaust and how not just the Jewish people, but the gypsies and the political prisoners and anybody that was not of the purely Aryan race was killed. Over 6 million civilians were murdered by Hitler. And it was during this period that the Pleiadians were continuing to feed technological information to this group, a psychic group, affiliated with the Vril Society, directly, and it was directly going, they answered to Hitler, directly to Hitler, no middlemen. So there is no question about who they were working for. These are historical, well-documented facts. So if you want to jump on a Pleiadian spaceship, I strongly suggest caution. Think about who you are involving with. And I would say that about all extraterrestrials coming to this planet from outside. Make sure that you know who they are, where they are coming from, and most importantly, what their agenda is. Because the truth is, if they are making inroads in the planet, in that they are building themselves bases of operation, interacting with the government, abducting people, sending out messages through channelers, and so on and so forth, then they have some kind of vested interest in the planet. They want something. The only extraterrestrials who don't want something are those who keep their ships in orbit, send down maybe an exploratory group to pick a few plants or check out a few animals and leave again. Those who want nothing from us do not spend their time making bases on this planet. And I would venture to say that although there may possibly be an exception, maybe, the vast majority of extraterrestrials want something from us, and they don't tell us what it is that they want. In other words, there's no honesty and there's no integrity. And without honesty and integrity amongst these extraterrestrial beings, I would not trust any of them, except those that I knew personally and for a very long time.
There was a lady I was listening to a few minutes ago, a researcher. There's so many of them out there. And she was talking to Linda Mutant Howell a few minutes ago. And for those individuals who want to know who Linda Mutant Howell, she's been a researcher at least 40 years. And she's famous for the A Strange Harvest, that award-winning documentary that she produces some three or four decades. But the lady was commenting this way.
We, as humans, I think, trying to get our arms around the reality of non-human intelligence, all of us perhaps have this tendency to put what I happen to think may be a range of intelligent beings with a range of agendas, range of origins. If there is, and of course there's the raging debate about are all beings bad, non-human beings bad, are they malevolent or are they benevolent? I happen to think it's a scope. So if the group that we may be looking at here being alleged to throw this mandate of secrecy or demand this mandate of secrecy from our governments are the malevolent ones, then you go into the whole idea of all of these other species who are interacting with us lay people on the planet. I'm getting letters every day at this point, really, from all of you out there, many of you, who are having interactions with non-human intelligence. So it seems like there may be a lot of things going on concurrently. You've got this one group over here that's maybe threatening our government, saying absolutely no way can you let anything out of the box here. You've got a myriad of other groups that are reaching out to us privately that are trying to get this push forward, which would tell me that there is some sort of a non-human being war going on. I'm throwing a lot out there because I think all of that's on the table.
How do you view all
that's
this?
True.
I mean, go ahead.
No,
how do you? Go ahead.
That's absolutely true. The war has been going on in space for millennia, right? The biggest battle that I'm familiar with, of course, has been the ongoing battle for millions of years between the Anunnaki and the reptilians. Ever since the reptilians decided to venture out from Draco and try and get down onto planet Earth, and that's hundreds and thousands, millions of years this has been going on. It is a constant battle. The ones, I won't go that direction. I will say this. I would agree with that lady that there is a wide scope of good, bad, and indifferent among the extraterrestrials, and that we need to be extremely discerning. And the majority of us don't have that ability. We don't know enough about our contact with extraterrestrial beings to be able to discern, is this a good one or is this a bad one? We don't have enough experience to make that judgment. That's why I'm saying before you ever get on somebody's space, or before you, when they make contact with you, look at you sometimes clips of my darling George, you know, George Green, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who died three and a half years now since George died. George was doing a fantastic job going all over the place trying to waken people up to the realities of what was happening on this planet through the governments of the world, you know, the way they were leading us towards these disasters like the WEF and global government and taking away your freedoms and what to do. You know, he was trying to show people, buy gold and silver, don't keep money in the bank because they'll take it away, which is true. The pension funds are all actually bankrupt and there's no money to keep paying out, which is true, right? So everything George was saying was perfectly correct. And people all over the world were listening to George's message. I'm going back some years now. And then he made contact with the Palladians, and in particular with Billy Meyer, who has been the Palladian photographer, putting out the photos of their ships for, 30, 40 years now. He's been doing those photographs and putting them out. All very genuine photographs. What Billy Myers was doing was done in all sincerity, and what the information he was putting out with really happened. It was real stuff. George went over there, met with Billy Meyer, and these two extraterrestrials introduced themselves to George, said their names were Quetzal and Semyasi. And Semyasi was the one who for 30 years prior to that, or 20 years, had been giving information to Billy Meyer about spirit, about the universe, about what it was like on other planets and in other situations, about time travel and longevity. She'd been feeding him this. It's the written stuff is called the Billy Meyer contact notes, because Billy wrote everything down for years. And they talked George into publishing books for them, which they called The Handbook to the New Paradigm. And it wasn't that what was in those books was not correct information, but the problem was that it transpired, and George did not find this out before he died. It came to light with some documentary publications several months after George died. It was in a book of Dr. Michael Sallers. George died in June, and in the September of 2019, This book was published, and I read it because I was interested in the material. But to my horror, in there I find out, with photographic and documentary evidence, that these two people, Semyasi and Quetzal, are not extraterrestrials. They are not Pleiadians, although they are working hand in glove with the Pleiadian group under the Antarctica, where the Germans and the reptilians are, same location, right? And that they are really the two people who were feeding the information in World War II to Hitler. Her name is Maria Orsic. I forget what his name is. But neither one of them were extraterrestrials. And when somebody discovered a photograph of them and was able to access them and confront them about this, they admitted it. And they said, well, we take these names and we pretend to be extraterrestrials so people will believe us. That is a level of the integrity. And I want to say that with contacts on the planet, the Ashtar Command and Hatton, who spoke for the Ashtar, by the way, Hatton was another big lie, right? And I know that personally. That was just one big lie, right? But this Pleiadian group, they are the most common group of extraterrestrials being channeled by people or in contact with people across the planet today. So let's think twice about who we talk to. If you are in contact with an extraterrestrial, just take their information, say, yes, that's very interesting. File it away at the back of your brain and wait 10 or 20 or 30 years and see what results come from that information. Wait and see. Is it true and valid information they're giving me? Are they misleading me in any way? What does this material represent to me? How is this material being given to me? What method are they using to contact me? Suspect of all of it. What usually happens is that people get so overwhelmed, especially if, as happened to George, these people actually presented themselves physically, shook hands, gave him some tests and trials and showed him stuff, right, that proved who they were. It proved nothing except they were technologically very skilled. But the point is that they can have an overpowering presence. And if they actually come and meet you and talk to you, you believe it. It's like, I believe it because I'm seeing it. If it is extraterrestrial, I'm just asking everybody, just ask questions. I'm not telling you they're good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying, ask questions. Don't just swallow it wholesale. All you're actually doing, and I found this is true of a lot of people, when they do have an extraterrestrial contact, whether it's through prayer, meditation, seeing spaceships, actually having encounters with them, and they do regression and they find out about these encounters, or they don't do regression, they just meet them and have these conversations and experiences. What they tend to do is replace their childhood religious beliefs with a belief in these extraterrestrials. So in many cases, UFO contact and extraterrestrial interactions, with all the sweetness and light speeches that a lot of them make about raising consciousness, they will come and say to you, I mean, I've known them do this. I've had people come and tell me this experience. Well, we're contacting you. You're one of the chosen ones. You're a star seed, and you're here to raise the consciousness of other people. And this is somebody who doesn't know Christmas from Easter. There's no way in their own, you know, this is, they're not, I doubt if they try and con people like the Dalai Lama, whose, you know, speeches you, I don't suppose, I am sure he has extraterrestrial contact, but I doubt that they con him into anything. They wouldn't dare, because he is an enlightened being, and he will be able to see right through them. But most of us have not reached that level of enlightenment where we can make a true and accurate assessment of the intentions and agendas of any extraterrestrials that we meet. We just can't do it. We're not evolved enough ourselves.
Well, that's true. But isn't there a rule or a command or proviso that the extraterrestrials cannot interfere with the life activity of people here on Earth. Isn't that so?
Yes. Yes, Russell. That's true. That really is the golden rule of the universe. Non-interference with the life stream of another on any level, right? And this is why they said to me, you know, don't do channeling. Don't let any other entity take you over and speak through you, meaning they take over your mind and what they want to say comes out of your mouth. Don't allow that because a highly evolved being would never do that to you. They would never take over your mind and speak through you or take over control of any part of your body in order to act or speak through you. If they give you information telepathically and then you choose to speak that information or tell it out loud, then that's your choice. You're taking, just like I do. I mean, they tell me stuff all the time, and then I decide whether that's what I wish to say or not. It's my choice and my responsibility whether I choose to tell what they are telling me, whether I choose to tell anyone else what they are telling me. But that's not the same as channeling when they take you over, like Jay-Z Knight, for instance. Jay-Z Knight went into a trance state, and the being Ramtha took her over and spoke through her. So it wasn't Jay-Z Knight speaking, it was Ramtha speaking. And in the things, that's a big no-no. That is not allowed.
But I go to these channels and listen to these people. I mean, the television guy or Cosmic Connections or Beyond Belief, and people are channeling all, and it's increasing by the numbers, if you will. But anyway, in some contactees are saying that of all the billions of planets and thousands of galaxies in the universe, that the Earth is the worst planet out there. They call it a prison planet, the outback of the universe. Why? Why are they saying that?
No. Let me say something, and I'll say it loud and clear. This planet Earth is the single most beautiful planet in this whole quadrant of the universe, without question. And I have lived on and experienced many other planets, including my home planet, Avertakia, and none of them compare in beauty and lushness that planet Earth has. And when you go back to the time, like 40,000-50,000 years ago, when you might say we still had the Garden of Eden, this entire planet was a lush garden, unbelievable, with fruits and berries and trees growing everywhere with wonderful edible things on them. The whole planet was like a Garden of Eden, not just a tiny little patch of it in the Euphrates. It was the whole planet was lush and beautiful, and it can still be like that. We have destroyed it. Mankind in the last 6,000 years has degraded the quality of this planet considerably. But that has been man's right, you might say, because the planet belongs to Earth humankind. This is our planet. Now, it belongs to us. You are correct in saying that it's been used as a prison planet. The story of that is that for millennia, from the time of the dinosaurs, really, even before that, I can't tell you how far back it is. It's eons of time, even before the dinosaurs, that's what I want to say. But eons and eons of time, when Earth was actually a much bigger planet, and there was a collision with another huge body traveling through the solar system, it collided with Earth. It fractured a piece off Earth, which broke up, and the broken up parts from this big collision became the asteroid belt. Now this is ancient science, if you like, ancient archaeology of the universe. But it became that huge asteroid belt, which closes off the inner part of the solar system from the outer part. That, I forget, there's a proper name for that band of asteroids. The Kuiper Belt, is it called? Something like that. Anyway, it's this huge band of asteroids. And that closed Earth off from any interference for millions of years. And during those millions of years, Earth itself evolved multiple species on it, of its flora and its fauna. So it became like a giant garden covered with lushness. And it also had hominid species that had evolved really to being upright, walking, right? Walking on hind legs, all part of the animal and natural species on the planet in the process of evolution. Well, the Anunnaki, of course, being the spacefarers that they were, had many times passed by Earth. They knew a great deal about it. And they also knew that it was heavily laden with gold. And there came a time in their own history where they needed to repair their atmosphere, which was badly damaged. Somebody said it was damaged from nuclear war, but that's not correct. It's even worse than that. Their story is even worse than that. They had previously lived on an entirely different planet. Two houses, the two families, the two ruling families, had had a fight with one another and had destroyed that, which was a rather small planet, little planetoid, more a planetoid than a planet. But they were using it as a home base at the time. They had destroyed that with the atomics. So they had moved to the planet, which is still their home base, the one we call Nibiru or the crossing planet. And its atmosphere was so damaged. And their scientists decided that fine powdered gold suspended in their upper atmosphere would seal off these, like we have the holes in the ozones now at the North and South Pole, through our own atmospheric damage that we have done. They had a similar problem on their planet. And they knew there was plenty of gold on Earth, right? They knew about it because of this historic collision that had occurred millennia before, right? And so they wanted to find a way. And one of their pilots, who was a renegade, really, he found this clever little trick that he did to get through into this inner solar system where Earth resides. And it was really a simple idea, but it was brilliant. The outer planets, Jupiter, Neptune, I forget which one they used, right, Saturn, but the great planets in the outer area, one of them is hugely waterborne, and a great deal of water can be pulled off, I understand. I don't know the technology of this, but I understand you can actually draw water from that planet fairly readily. So he had the brilliant idea of using his spaceship like a huge water cannon, like you've seen the fireman with a fire hose, and it can even, a full fire hose can even push a parked car out of the way, you know, the power of that water going through under pressure. Well, he used his spaceship in pretty much like a giant fire hose, and he blasted the asteroids ahead of him, clearing himself a path down to Earth. And then he let the rest of the people know back home, and they all came down, and we know the whole story of the connection of Anunnaki on this planet when they came to mine the gold. So this is really ancient history on this planet, and it was the beginning of a complete change for human history. But this is still the most beautiful planet, and it also at that time didn't have any sentience. Species, no, maybe that's the wrong word. It didn't have Homo sapiens before the time of Homo sapiens. This is the era when you had Cro-Magnon, Neanderthal, and they weren't even organized in tribal groups at that time. They were just advancing to being an upright animal species on the planet, an advanced animal species. And so other planets, other extraterrestrial groups that were space travelers and that were technologically very advanced and didn't want to keep criminals on their home planet, they started shipping them down to Earth, just like Britain used to send its criminals to Australia 200 years ago. It shipped thieves and murderers and cutthroats and you name it, shipped them all to Australia, right? Well, the other advanced extraterrestrials did the same thing, but they shipped their criminals to planet Earth. This is how we actually have a variety of people on this Earth. But the original Homo sapiens, the original Earth human that was first made Homo sapien, made modern man, was based out of the people of East Africa. In those ancient times, Africa was known as the land of Sheba. The eastern side of Africa was known as Sheba. And it was a female out of the land of Sheba, a black lady whose eggs were first taken and fertilized to create the foundation of Homo sapiens, from which all of us are genetically developed, because those genes were spread over the next several thousand years, were spread. It was about 30 to 40,000 years that was of Earth time, where that gene was gradually spread throughout the population all over the face of the Earth. And so every group of people on the planet had the opportunity through breeding among themselves to become Homo sapien or modern man, which is where we all descend from. And it's from that, the original Eve, who provided the eggs for this, was the lady out of East Africa.
Let me ask you another question.
That's how we can, yeah.
Okay, about that. When they designed and created that human being, if you will, they didn't give that human being the capabilities that they have already had, like mental telepathy, remote viewing, and some of the other things. Is that true?
Okay. Second here, I dropped the phone thing. That is true and not true, right? What they did give us was the capability of evolving into it. All those gifts that you are mentioning, telepathy, clairvoyance, clairaudience, healing, genius, intelligence, all these things are basically opening up areas of the functioning Homo sapien brain, right? And so we have to develop our brain. And what is it that we're developing? The brain, by the way, is of itself, it's just a physical organ, you know, like your heart and your lungs and everything else. And what it serves as is the processing function for your mind, for your intelligence. You use the physical brain to process that. And what is it that you are processing? What is it that you are learning to manage, to recognize and control? It is frequencies. Everything that exists has a frequency specific to itself. Every color vibrates at a frequency. This is why, blind people will tell you they can feel colors, like blue is a cold color. And any of us can experiment with this. If you get something that's just a solid blue and you put it down on your kitchen countertop and you close your eyes and just rest your hand lightly about an inch or so or half an inch over that sheet of blue paper, you will feel, if you just stay quiet and relax your mind, right, just let go, you will feel a coolness in the palm of your hand. Now you do the same thing with a sheet that's red, bright scarlet red, and put your hand over, and now you will feel a warmth coming off the red. those are the vibrations or the frequencies coming off the colors. So everything in existence has its own specific frequency. And those spiritual attributes, I consider them spiritual, but they're not just spiritual. They're simply attributes of clairvoyance, clairaudience. All these things are just specific frequencies. And by experience, by self-discipline, by training, by wanting to do it, you can expand your mind, and your mind can touch those frequencies. And when you practice enough and have enough self-discipline, eventually your mind can tell your brain to develop the ability to process those frequencies so that you recognize them in a physical way. But they are inbuilt into you. You have the capability. Everybody has those capabilities. They just take a long time to develop, that's all. Most of us are struggling enough, you know, to be disciplined enough to manage our exercise programs and our digestion and do our jobs while we're on this planet. And physical bodies are very restricting.
That the human being is using maybe 5% or less of his or her abilities, and 90 to 95% of them are not being used. Would you say that's true? How would you comment on that?
Yeah, most of us don't use, I mean, scientifically proven fact, most of us do not use more than 10 or 12%. In fact, they say that the geniuses among us, you know, like the Einsteins, they're only using 12% of their brain.
Okay.
So, yes, we have huge capability that we do not use.
But they're not even been...
We have the ability. We just don't do it.
Well, I know the government had a program back in the 60s and the 70s with remote viewing and telepathy that Hal Puthoff and Ingall Swann and many others mastered, if you will. Matter of fact, they have books out on that. But that's not normally developed or pushed or taught or practiced in our universities and colleges. Would you say that's true? It's not pushed. It's not taught.
Oh, no. It's definitely not something that is promoted in any way for something that we should try to develop. But we can know that we all have it. You know, everybody has had those experiences of deja vu, for example, which is pretty much like clairvoyance, because deja vu is really when some part of your mind jumps ahead in time and reports something that's going to happen and then comes back and tells your brain about it. And you in your brain recognize it when it happens as, oh, this is deja vu. I've done this before. I've been here before. I've seen this before. I've heard millions and millions of people have had that deja vu experience. It's very common. And yet, they don't make the connection that is only, it's like the tip of the iceberg with being clairvoyant. Because that's all a clairvoyant does, is step out of their own brain into their mind and let their mind go and look wherever they want to look. That's the whole thing with remote viewing. It's the whole thing with clairvoyance. A clairvoyant is not looking necessarily on this planet. I know when I used to work, I was looking off the planet into another whole frequency, another whole dimension, you might say. So we all can do this, and we've all had these experiences at some time. We've all, or many, many, millions and millions of people have had the experience where someone that they love deeply, been away from them, maybe when they've been, you know, in another part of the planet.
Okay.
And they're at home and they say, oh, I had a moment just now. We often call it a goose walked over my grave. You know, that sudden shudder goes through us and we know that something bad has happened to somebody that we care about.
But weren't you teaching metaphysics years ago? And doing readings, yes?
Yes.
And so you were teaching people how to do that, from what I understand.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Absolutely.
But
because,
why,
as I say, we all have the ability.
I go back to William Tompkins, who just left us at 94. And he had been with the secret space programs from the, as you know, from the late 30s up until the time he left. But I just want to play a clip that he says how we are miseducated because they are hiding this the real secrets of how we can think, behave, and use our talents from us.
People all over this planet for at least 6,000 years have been influenced by extraterrestrials, the Dracos and the Reptilians. They have taken the information that is in essentially every school on the planet, and they've modified the information. All history documentation in this country and on every country on the planet have been given lies about astronomy, lies about mathematics, lies about technical capabilities, lies about the universe, you name it, okay? Everything have been lies. Every PhD on this planet, whether they're scientific, whether they're medical, makes no difference. Every book that they read the 6 years they were in the university are lies. They're not telling the truth. They were not taught the truth. At that time, we had 34 admirals in the Navy. All of them had been through Annapolis. They learned how to learn everything about the Navy, everything about history, everything about mathematics, everything about astronomy, you name it. They learned all lies. So who did the Secretary of Navy Forrestal select for this job? Turns out Admiral Riccobata was not an American. He was born in Australia. The Secretary of the Navy selected an Australian man who had not been infected with the lies that the reptilians had taught us. He was freer of that. So the Secretary of the Navy was aware of this because he had been contacted by Nordic extraterrestrials, people here trying to help the United States. Okay? Very important point. So when I was selected, I hadn't been to the universities. I hadn't gotten the bad information. I hadn't been given the wrong information, and this is the reason I was selected, because I was knowledgeable of the Navy, I was knowledgeable what the threats were, but I hadn't gone to the university and picked up all the lies.
So he's kind of inferring, making the inference here that the Nordics were benevolent. Maybe other aliens may be a different, but he's saying the Nordics are benevolent. Did you find that to be true? The Nordics?
I don't know them. In my mind, I have never found the difference between those they call Nordics and those they call Pleiadians. I don't know the difference between those two groups. And as I said before, as far as the Pleiadians go, their message is good, but I'm not sure that their intentions are really good.
Yeah, so you indicated that on several occasions.
You know, it's for everybody to find their own truth in all these matters. I totally agree with what he was saying about the education. The education is not only filled with rewritten history and packs of lies everywhere you look. Just the great lies that control all our lives. Just one simple example of what I'm talking about. When I went to school, to high school, you still had scripture lessons in high school in England. This was in England, right? Way back in the 1940s, 1950s, right? And so you had a Bible that you had in school. And my Bible had a map in the front of it of the Holy Land. And the Holy Land was called Palestine. And it was filled with the descendants of Abraham through his sons, Ishmael and Isaac, right? These were Abraham's sons, and they were their descendants, and they were the Jewish, what became known as the Jewish people, and what became known as the Arabic people, living in Palestine, in the land of Palestine. Now, somewhere along the way, and I know all the story, you know, the whole historic things, but somewhere along the way, in the wisdom of the Western politicians, all that land has now become the single state of Israel and belonging to the Jewish people. And of course, they kicked the Arabs out, right? That's and what have we had since this was decided by politicians? Not by God. We're told it was God's word because God gave this land to the Jewish people. That's not true. If you read your Bible, he gave them the Valley of Canaan. And the Valley of Canaan is a pretty small area compared to the size of Israel, right? And if they'd taken back the Valley of Canaan and said, this is what God gave in the beginning, then remember who those gods were that they're speaking about. The God they are speaking about is, of course, the Lord Enki, who was in charge of the matters of the land at the time of the Anunnaki on the planet. So it was the Anunnaki who ceded them the Valley of Canaan. And the vast majority of people living in Israel today are not even descendants of the Jewish race out of Palestine. They are descendants of a state called Khazaria, which existed in the Middle Ages, several hundred years after Christ. About 800 years ago, it came into being and lasted for a long time. And it was called Khazaria. It became absorbed into the USSR when Russia became a complete communist nation and absorbed all these other countries into it, like, you know, Turkestan was a neighboring country that ceased to exist, and Khazaria was a country that ceased to exist. And the people of Khazaria, hundreds of years ago, had a king, and the king historically traded, and records of him and his trade route are well documented in medieval history. He traded with the Jewish people out of the Middle East. Silks, herbs, you know, all the things that they sold. They traded back and forth, right? And that went on for years. And the king was so impressed with these people, and especially impressed with their doctors and their level of medicine and understanding of medical matters, that he said, how is it that you as a people are so advanced? And the Jewish traders told him, my lord, we are as advanced as we are because God is on our side and we get lots of information from God. He said, okay, I want the same religion as you. So he declared the nation of Khazaria as a Jewish nation. It had nothing to do genetically with the Jewish people and never has had, never will have. They are not genetically Jewish. And this is now probably as many as 80% of the Jewish people living in Israel. So the Jewish people are not actually Jewish. And yet look at all the trouble that has gone on in the world since World War II, centered around the state of Israel. So this is all political. This is the problem on the planet, not the Jewish people themselves, the genetic Jewish people. They are not and never were the problem. They are probably some of the most intelligent people across the face of the planet. They are certainly among the cleverest group of people you will ever find in matters financial and medical. You know, they are have been brilliant. And in fact, they work with the Palestinian people, the Arab, when it was Arabs and Jews together. And out of that relationship came the founding of the university in Iraq, in the city of Baghdad, who now they're at loggerheads with. But 1,000 years ago, they founded that university in Baghdad, and it's been a running, operating university for over 1,000 years now. So these people that we're dealing with, if politics were not involved, would be the most advanced people on the planet, without question. They are light years ahead of a country like America that's only 200 years old and teaches what it teaches, so that we are now educationally down to number 26 or 28 in the level of average intelligence in the developed nations. America, we always think we're number one and we're first, and we're not. We're way down the line. Our young people are sub-educated, even bearing comparison with like England and Ireland and small countries like that. Their education is light years ahead of what we have. And that's why this man, Tompkins, when he's making those statements, is 100% correct. We not only have inferior education in America, we have lies. Our students and everybody, we're taught lies.
How do we
see what they're telling us is not true?
Mm-hmm. How do we see things coming to the fore in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years when the Anunnaki, reptilians, Nordics, Palladians, whomever else, the blue avians, whatever, the number of species coming here to this planet. Now, how is that going to be resolved in terms of solving the problem? There are fights going on this planet, fights going on in the galaxies between species.
Yes. Yeah.
How is all that going to be resolved? The Palestinians are still upset about the land being taken over in 1948 with the Balfour Agreement, backed by the United States, France, and England. But anyway, I didn't want to get into all that except to say it's
all politics.
Okay. All right.
It's all that everything that's wrong with this planet. You know, we started a long time ago saying that this was a prison planet and the worst planet in the universe. And I'm saying, no, it's probably the best planet there is as a planet. The problem and the only problem with this planet is put in office and allowed to make the decisions about what can and cannot be done on, in, and with the planet. In other words, politicians.
Okay.
That is the problem. And remember that with the politicians, the original politicians, 6,000 years ago, which is what Mr. Tompkins mentions there, he says all this has gone on the last 6,000 years. Well, that's when the Anunnaki handed rulership. The only extraterrestrials that we have true connection with are the Anunnaki, because we as the human Earth species have their genes into our bodies. That's what made us Homo sapien in the first place, the genetic engineering where they put some of their genes. So that means we are like the Anunnaki. We are first cousins of the Anunnaki, and the Anunnaki are the only ones that have a genuine connection to the people of planet Earth.
Now, wait a minute.
So those are the history. Those are the history.
Back
all
up
the
a
other
little bit.
Extraterrestrials. Okay.
You're saying that of all the vastness and all the different species that we known and unknown in the vastness of the universe, the Anunnaki are the only benevolent ones.
No, I didn't say that.
Well,
they are the only ones that we as Earth humans have a real connection with.
Okay.
We have a biological connection. They are like first cousins to us down on Earth. We are like them, they are like us, right? In a way that we are not, because we are genetically connected to them. They were the ones who did the genetic engineering that made us Homo sapiens. And what gave us that uplift from Neanderthals running around with clubs in our hands and beating animals to death to eat raw meat, they moved us from that to the thinking capable, creative, life understanding, intelligent beings that we are today. We went from evolving man to Homo sapiens, to intelligent, sentient man, to self-aware man. And that was done because we were given some of the Anunnaki genes into our genetic code, into our DNA. We are genetically connected to the Anunnaki. We are not genetically connected to any of the other foreign species.
But you know.
Terrestrial species.
But you know.
No, I know we are not. We are not, okay. Except, and there is an exception to this, except in those cases where badly intentioned, meaning they only want to use humans and have control over them, badly intentioned extraterrestrials like the Greys, right, and others, not just the Greys, have abducted humans in their greed, in their breeding programs, and tried to develop hybrid species between themselves and Earth humans. Those Earth humans who have experienced that, and any surviving progeny, have been affected and changed by other extraterrestrials, not had their DNA altered, but by breeding with them have produced altered children. And what those, how many of those there are on the planet, I don't know. Not a great many, because it's a hard program. It's been going on a long time. It's never very successful. And most of the hybrids that evolved from that program either have huge abnormalities and are not let loose back on the surface. They're kept underground, or they die at birth. Very, very few. There are very, very few. I doubt if there's more than a few dozen survivals that have been able to come out in society. But I don't know the actual numbers on that. But I do know that it's not a successful program. So there won't.
How
be
about Dorsey?
Dorsey.
What's happening?
The underground base, you mean? Oh yes, that's,
yes.
The breeding program's been going. No, the breeding program's been going on there for years, probably the last 150, 200 years at least. That makes it, of course, a fairly recent program in terms of a breeding program. But no, it has been going on a long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
here's some other facts I just wanted to address, because I do want to get to another subject matter. But take a listen to this and kind of respond to this.
The pilots from United Airlines, the employees, they were clear that they were not supposed to talk about this. Literally not one witness to this event would put their name on the record. Not one.
The FAA is still pinning this to some kind of weather phenomenon, that some lights from the airport and the overcast sky somehow got together and created this image. But weather experts, astronomy experts, others that I've talked to said that that's bunk.
Somebody has an obligation within the government. If it's not the FAA, it's got to be someone else, to deal with that, to protect the aircraft that are around it, to find out what it is.
It seems to me that the likeliest conclusion here is that the aliens have landed many years ago in this country, in this world, with one goal in mind, to create conspiracy theories and then just sit back and enjoy them.
The acronym UFO has come to be a real loaded term. Unidentified flying object. That's all it means.
Okay.
The question, do you believe in UFOs, really doesn't make any sense. There's no issue of belief there. The question is maybe, what do you believe they are? But whether they exist is not even a matter of belief. It's a fact.
Okay. So it's a fact that UFOs are here, but that secret has been kept from the masses of people because on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Sirius Radio, it has not been discussed in any serious way. And now, recently, the Pentagon says, well, there's some things flying around. We don't know quite where they come from, what they are doing. So now that's a soft disclosure, may I say. Is that right? Can we say it like that? That now
yes,
the governments of the world are coming to the fore, for whatever reason, to say, yeah, there's something out there that we have been saying for the last 70 years, that they were marsh gas, they were imagination, they were a cloud in the sky, whatever. But no, Operation Blue Book, Project Barrage, yeah, there is something out there now. Why? Why are they coming to the light of day? Why?
Well, I think, here's what I think about this, right? And of course, I can't prove it. But imagine this, that our Pentagon, and this, if all the documentary evidence is in fact itself correct, right? That our Pentagon has many generals in it who are working closely, interactively with the Germans under Antarctica and the Pleiadians developing extraordinary craft technology, right? That this sharing has gone on since the time of Eisenhower and has expanded greatly. We know factually now that we have two separate, one which is, if you like, on the side of the army and the relationship with the Germans and their technology, and the other which is run by our Navy, and you might call them the white hats out in space trying to do whatever they are doing out there. So that in itself is a whole other story. But yes, I think that the reason that they have used the cover-up or excuse of saying, well, we couldn't let this information out because the public would freak out and run in a panic and it would be disastrous. You know, there'd be panic all over the world and riots and so on and so forth. So we couldn't possibly let them know that we know about these extraterrestrials. Well, that's kind of ridiculous because the true extraterrestrials, the actual number of real entities, is probably no more than a few thousand scattered about the planet in their little bases, all of which are well known to the government. And they could have explained those in a number of ways. But wouldn't it be harder to explain if what I said earlier is in fact true, that 80% of the UFOs come from this planet and mostly come from the Pleiadian and German reptilian bases run by our own Pentagon people or in conjunction with the Pentagon, generals out of the Pentagon, and of course that minute group in the CIA that control things. You know, I think you called them the Majestic 12 group, who were also involved with Martin Lockheed, right? They are a very small group controlling all these stories. How are they going to explain in an acceptable way to the American public and the United Nations and the world? Well, the United Nations is part of the bad news as far as I'm concerned, but the population of the world in general, that all these UFOs and high technology are coming out of the Antarctic base where they are working with the leftovers of Hitler's regime and his group. And it's all about armaments and technology and control. And it's the armaments and technology techniques that they are using, like putting planes out with chemtrails and other different things that the governments of the world have been using the last 20 years, using to dumb down and control the human population on this planet. And it's our fellow governmental humans in cahoots with the reptilians that are primarily doing this. How are they going to explain that to the people? When we find out that our generals who are supposed to be protecting our borders are busy working with a bunch of Nazis under the ice in Antarctica, building super weapons in the form of these UFOs and other technology with which to control us so that they can just zoom over our heads and use their technology to map us everywhere we go and know everything we do and tell us what we can buy and what we can sell and what medicines we have to take. What do you think we're going to do? Yeah, we are going to rise up. Yes, there will be unrest, but it won't be panic running, cowering in corners. Certainly not in the neck of the woods that I live in. When that happens here, it will be out come the hunting rifles, and we might not make much impact against a UFO, but we will certainly be standing against that kind of control over us, especially when we find out it's our own governments doing it to us. Now, yes. When I say government, I don't really mean the people we put in Congress. They are helpless. They're sheep just like the rest of us. They have no control.
People in Congress and the Senate of the United States, elected officials and governors and state senators and state council persons and even the presidents, many of whom are out of sync in terms of knowing the real secret. As a matter of fact, they said Eisenhower, he made that, you know, in the Council of Governments, we must guard against the acquisition of unwanted influence. But he was denied access to the secret government of the United States. And I just want to play this clip and you can address
that. That's when I realized in December 1993 that our country, the Constitution, the rule of law had completely run off the rails, at least in this specific area. And it was pretty much what Eisenhower, if you looked at last speech Eisenhower made when he left office, when he said, beware the military-industrial complex because it will become a threat if we're not careful to our democracy and our way of life. That was his farewell speech. And this is a five-star general, World War II hero, of course, and a Republican. And no one really understood why he made that as his last speech. Well, it turns out one of his military guys who worked with him the last couple years of his administration was an old guy that I got to know who was one of our disclosure project whistleblowers, said, oh yeah, I was at the White House and Eisenhower had been pushed aside and had lost control of those projects. So I think this is the part of the story that people have a hard time, in a sense, getting their minds around, because we all grew up with our history lessons and our civic lessons and the president is the commander in chief and blah, blah, blah. In reality, the emperor has no clothes, and there are classified projects that go on, unfortunately, that are not supervised by the president or the Congress. So that led me with Daniel Sheehan to conclude that these projects were illegal. A priori, they cannot claim the rule of law to suppress testimony and disclosure of the subject. So we concluded that we could go forward with top secret documents and witness testimony and put it out to the public. And that's what we have been doing.
Now that's Dr. Greer, Stephen Greer.
Yes.
And talk about him for a minute. What is he doing? What has he been doing for the last three to four decades?
Well, he was somebody that George knew, and he used to call George, and they would talk sometimes, because Stephen Greer is a brilliant man. You know, he gave up his medical practice pretty much in order to become one of those people who was gathering data from the whistleblowers and putting it out there to the public. He really is a seeker after truth and a great researcher. And now we are fortunate to have many people. Dr. Greer, of course, he's still doing his wonderful work and well worth listening to anytime or getting hold of any of his material and perusing it. It's a brilliant man. And takes great trouble to make sure that what he is saying is the truth. He truly is somebody that you can trust when he says it. It's like Dr. Michael Sala. When he prints it in his books, you can believe that as far as it is humanly possible to dig out the truth, these men, Dr. Sala, Dr. Greer, William Tompkins, these people dug out the truth and presented it to us, the public. And it's up to us to be discerning enough to recognize these people are telling the truth, and we really should be paying attention to what they're saying. I'm a great fan of Dr. Greer. I love his work.
Right, right. But he's right on it. And he talks, and he says, and here's another statement by him.
So what has happened, and what the sort of through the looking glass that happened to me, was that from that experience, I then had a briefing a couple years later with General Patrick Hughes. Now, for people who don't know who he was the three-star general who is the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is like the CIA for the Pentagon. It's the big clearing operation for intelligence gathering and assessments and analysts. And the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, General Hughes, had made inquiries through proper channels onto this subject, and he was denied access. So I was asked to come in with my military advisor and a couple other people to brief him, and he told the same story. In fact, he went over to his bookshelf. Now imagine this. I'm at the Pentagon, where the generals and admirals, that part of the Pentagon, he goes over to, in his conference room, goes over to his bookshelf, picks up a little ET doll like you'd get at a store, toy store, and he said furiously, he said, "This is all I've ever gotten in my inquiry about this through channels as the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency."
So the big deal is, as we come down to the real deal, that there's a group, and they call themselves the Majestic 12, I mean, years ago, that was set up by Harry Truman, that have access to all the UFO information, Antarctica, Roswell, other places, and all the downed craft, so they keep it, and keep it, and even from General Eisenhower, Carter, and JFK. And what did, you've been keeping up with the JFK a bit. What did Sellers say about JFK and the private information that he was denied, the privileged information?
Kennedy actually wrote, there is a copy in one of Dr. Sellers' books of the letter that Kennedy wrote requesting information from the CIA about the entirety of the UFO and extraterrestrial information that this CIA group, the Majestic 12 group, had about the extraterrestrials. And they wrote back and they said, you know, you're not, basically, sorry, Mr. President, you're not, it's a need to know thing. And we're not going to give you any access to this information because you need deniability before the public. You need to be able to deny any knowledge of it. And that's why we're not. That was their excuse for not giving the president. And he was not happy with that. So he actually signed an executive order, put together a small group, and then signed these. There was more than one. I think there were two or three executive orders that went out to two or three different departments in government, ordering each of them to investigate the extraterrestrial and UFO phenomena that was stamped in the country at that time. And Dr. Sala came to, he presents a lot of information in his book about it. I think the book is called Kennedy's Last Stand. And his contention in this book is that it was one of the main reasons why he believed Kennedy was assassinated, because he did those executive orders to these three bodies. And it, I forget who it was. I don't know if you remember, Russell, but it was groups like the NSA and the FBI and, you know, high-level organizational groups already extant in the government that he ordered through these executive orders to themselves dig in and get this information and present it to him in a report. And it was within two or three days after that that President John Kennedy was assassinated. And he goes very much into that and how it came about and what, you know, where the assassins came from and everything else. So it really is an interesting piece of American history, and an important piece, because it, even at the most superficial level, it tells us what power certain extraterrestrials have in conjunction with certain secretly hidden political groups in controlling what goes on, certainly in the United States and more broadly across the whole planet, with regard to the control of the human race and the management of our future, of our prospect, of everything about our lives. And if you just take a few minutes to look around and think of the years since President Kennedy, and by the way, three other presidents, right, and including Obama, all tried to get information and they couldn't. But eventually Obama got invited to go down to Antarctica. So one presumes that he decided to side with the reptilians and the Germans, because that was what all the heads of state and the Pope and various people went to visit Antarctica and see for themselves 3 or 4 years ago. You know, all these top people from around the world were invited to go and look. And basically it tells us how very near we are to global domination. That they would never, in all these years, they've never even let presidents know what was going on, let alone invited them to show them. And to, in that one summer, four summers ago, they invited heads of states from all over the world to go. I believe the Dalai Lama went. I know the Pope went. A representative of the Queen of England went. There were people, top people from every major country in the world were invited that summer to go. Well, that tells you that they feel pretty confident now that they can control this entire planet. And remember who it is that they went to visit. Ex-Nazis and reptilians. Those are the major group down there, supported in some way down there by the Pleiadians.
Right.
That's what's scary.
I just want to confirm that Buzz Aldrin went, the Pope went, Biden went, Putin went, and you say some representative individuals from the office of the Queen. But here, some people are coming to the fore, talking about that secret government, and his comment by
President
some.
Carter's organization. This is in January 21st. Actually, the meeting, I guess, took place on January 22nd. Of 1977, and President Carter, after his inauguration the previous day, called the Director of Central Intelligence in and informed him that the President wanted to have access to the classified documents relating to unidentified flying objects and the potential existence of extraterrestrial intelligence. At that time, the Director of Central Intelligence, George Bush Sr., informed the President that Mr. Bush was not going to release this information to the President.
In fact, Jimmy Carter was not brought into the loop. They, for some reason, the group, the control group, they don't trust the guy for some reason. They don't trust Jimmy Carter. They were afraid that he would come out and make statements, blanketed statements to the news media.
And the truth is, they have hidden things like UFO. And extraterrestrial information from us for years, not just the current era, but back before the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
There's about 38 levels above top secret. The highest is cosmic. That's, okay, I'll tell you right now, that's UFOs, aliens, and particleization. Now, like you heard a while ago, there's only probably about 25 people in the world that know things that are known at that level.
So that's a special top secret group that's been operating since the
40s. Yeah, I would, and I do have some personal information to add to that, right? That what he was saying is quite correct, I'm sure. and he mentioned about Jimmy Carter and that they were afraid. They wouldn't give him any information because they were afraid that, you know, he wouldn't go along with their program. Well, that is absolutely correct. Now, let me tell you this story. This is, if you like, my story, and it's true. When I was a much younger woman, and I believe I was living in, it might have been in Indonesia at the time. I can't remember what year Jimmy Carter was elected. But as you know, George was invited to be the chairman for the Finance Committee for the election of Jimmy Carter 2 years before he was being brought into office. And it coincided with an experience which I'd had, and I was not in America. I believe I was in Indonesia at the time, when in my nursing years. And I had this experience this particular day when my extraterrestrial lifelong friend came to visit, and he said, I've got some information for you that you might find interesting to watch for in the future. And I said, what's that? He said, and I'm talking about maybe 10, 15 years before Jimmy Carter. He said to me, in America, we were talking about world history, and he was unrolling world history to me as the way they saw it was going to come down. He said, and then in America, they will bring into office a blue-eyed farmer as president, and his name is Carter. And when he comes to office, he is being sent by us to try and warn the planet of what is coming. And he said, if they elect him to a second term of office, then his role as peacemaker will be fulfilled and there will be peace on planet Earth. But if he does not get elected to a second term of office, and he said to me, and we are very much afraid he won't, because at that time their home economic system will not be good. And if he is not elected to a second term of office, then that is the first step towards global upheaval and future warfare. So I said, well, what is his warning? He said, his job is to put out a warning to everybody, and not just in America, but for the world. Well, if you remember, it was Jimmy Carter, under his auspices, that the Georgia Guidestones were erected in Georgia, right, where he had been governor, right? When he became president, it was during that era, the Georgia Guidestones went up. And if you go online and just Google Georgia Guidestones, or Guidestones is one word, Georgia Guidestones, you will see, because it was literally written in stone, the Plan 2000. And this was the intention of the globalists, the one world government, the German reptilian government group that want world domination. This spells out their intentions. And their number one intention deals with depopulation, reducing the planet's population. That was their number one goal. And this was that's one of the first items on their list. And I don't know, there's 12 or 24 different things. And it's written. It's carved literally in this stone. And it's there for everybody to see. And it was Jimmy Carter's job to be to come as a peacemaker for the world, and to make sure that during his time in office, this warning went out to the world. I can't remember if it was up before, while he was still governor, or not until he was president, but it was in his era, the Georgia Guidestones, and that was Jimmy Carter's job, to warn the world of what was coming if they allowed these globalists to continue. And of course, we did throw Jimmy Carter out, or America did. I wasn't here then. They did throw him out. He didn't get a second term. You know where it's gone from there. And yep, this is yep, the involvement yep. of the extraterrestrials with the government. Their plan sure. is called Plan 2000.
Right.
I beseech anybody, go and read it. It's easy reading. It's in English. It's not hard to read. It takes 5 minutes to read it, but it tells you exactly what they intended to do, and they have been doing it ever since, and are bringing it to a conclusion now.
I would say for people who want to do research, start doing your research. You know, say study to show thyself approved, a workman that needeth not be ashamed. We got to do your homework. So I would say go listen to Stephen Greer. I mean, he's been out there for at least 40 years digging up all of this information so that people around the world have a knowledge of what's going on, the true history and ongoing political nuances, if you will, on the planet Earth. Here's another guy who was with the secret government, if you will, Clifford Stone. Look up these people. Clifford Stone said it this way.
Somewhere along the line, they may see that material and realize there's some very highly sensitive information that would have damning effect upon the national security of the United States should it become compromised. It requires to be further protected to ensure that there is only a limited access to that information to a small number of people. So small you can put them on a list of paper or on a piece of paper and list them by name. Thus, you have the special access programs. The controls that were supposed to be put on the special access programs are not there. When it comes to UFOs, the same criteria applies. The problem we have right now is that event, i.e. in the ultimate contact, where there is no longer a question about the reality of other beings in the universe coming here, that event has not taken place. Therefore, but a small nucleus within the intelligence community, numbering less than 100, and I'd suggest less than 50, control all that information. It is not subject to congressional review by the Information Security Oversight at all. We have got to get the documentation as it exists in the government files. We have got to get it released before it ultimately comes up being destroyed. During the discussion of UFOs, the question ultimately is going to come up, can any government keeps secrets, let alone the U.S. government? And the answer to that is unequivocally yes. But one of the greatest weapons the intelligence community has at their disposal is a predisposition by the American people, the American politicians, and I hate to call them debunkers, but we'll call them debunkers, people who wish to try to debunk UFO information. They immediately come out, oh, we can't keep secrets, we can't keep secrets. Well, the whole situation is, yes, we can. I am prepared to state that I have been at locations where craft of unknown origin that did not originate on the face of this planet was there. I am prepared to state that while I was there, we saw living, dead bodies of entities that were not born on this planet. I am prepared to state that we had what they referred to as interfacing with those entities. I am prepared to state that the situation is they have a school to try to indoctrinate people. I never went to that school. I always refused. We have contact with aliens not originating from some foreign country, but from some other solar system. And I have been a party to that.
Yeah, that's Clifford Stone. Now, you might want to Google his name. Because he was part of those persons who had the clearance above top secret, above the president, and he was right there on the stump collecting that information. So was Colonel Corso. Colonel Corso has left a book called The Day After Roswell, where he lays all of that out. Now, he's gone now, but he kept it for many decades, five, six, seven, at least 50 years or more that he was in charge of that. Now we have Stephen Greer out here researching all of this, and you can go to the Discovery Project, and look at what he's saying all over the internet.
In order for our civilization to move forward significantly, we're going to have something better than solar panels and windmills. And the good news is we have it. The bad news is there are sociopaths who are in super secret projects that don't want us to have it. And our civilization has been greatly harmed, not to mention our environment and biosphere. So a lot of people think this is about aliens. I said, no, it's not about ETs. It's about humans and how are humans going to get out of the conundrum we're in, which is a very serious problem, and move forward as a civilization instead of sliding backwards.
It is said that the aliens have the ability to have frequency medicine available for everybody on the planet. So you don't have to be poisoned by Big Pharm anymore. They have that already. They have energy. They have a wherewithal in terms of the technology, which is thousands, tens of thousands of years ahead of where we are today, that will allow everybody to have food, clothing, shelter, information, medical care, and transportation free. No one will starve to death anymore. But they're holding it back because they said, if we can't monetize this, if we can't get money for this, why are we going to give this to the people? You can answer some of those questions for us. Go ahead. Help us out, Julia.
I can. I'm not quite sure what question you want me to try and answer there. It is true that I don't agree with the supposition that nobody has to work for anything anymore. There's no such thing as a free lunch, but it doesn't have to be about money. I 100% agree with that. And I remember years ago when I was quite young, there was a professor at McGill University in Ontario, and he came out with mathematically, he was a math genius, right? And he had done a global mapping sort of plan, if you like. Of course, when I was young, there were not as many billions on the planet as there are today, but still there were a large number of people. And he worked it out that for everybody to have sufficient food and water and earn enough money, whatever the money was, whether, you know, it was represented by gold, silver, shells, whatever, because actually there is no such thing as money. I mean, there's no definition of what money is. Money can be anything that you use in exchange for goods that you acknowledge as something that you could, that has value. And so he worked it out that whatever the monetary system was, it would be enough for healthy adults to work only 3 days a week, to use energy output 3 days a week to achieve everything that they needed to sustain a reasonable lifestyle, and that this was for everybody on the planet. The entire planet could handle this. And this is something like the sort of cosmic view of, that I'm familiar with, which is the view of the Anunnaki. They have an idea that that first of all, money is not a necessary thing. We don't actually need money. What we need is the ability to produce the necessities of life and exchange them with one another for those things which are not necessities, so that we can have both things for pleasure and things that we need. Like we can have maybe a bicycle to ride or a car to drive, and we can also have food that we need to eat. And so in the Anunnaki view, they have a sort of daytime map that they live by, right? And the day always starts, they don't have any religion as such, but the day, you'd always start your day with half an hour of kind of yogic type stretching exercise that is also meditation and prayer time and however you want to use it to get your body in motion. And then you use the first half of the day for what they consider to be your civic duties in whatever skill you have, whether you go to teach school or you dig the land for crops or you do whatever you do that is your work. You do that for half the day. And then the other half of the day, you follow your own pursuits that are your creative pursuits, like art, music, literature, whatever it is. And they have a wonderful rule where at least one day every month, everybody has to do somebody else's job. So, for instance, one day in the month, the neurosurgeon has to empty the garbage trucks. Everybody has to experience what life is for all the other people. And this is a wonderful reminder, and it prevents anybody getting too egotistical, too out of themselves with their own importance because of their job. And so that system was something like this man in Canada had come up with, that for half a day, for half of a week, every week, 3 days, you should be able to have a comfortable living, and it could be done with a more fair distribution and things not done for profit, things not done for monetary gain, because the idea of monetary gain only leads to unfairness and unfair distribution of the necessities of life. So that's what we see all over the planet today. I mean, half the people in the world live on less than $1 a day, don't have clean drinking water, have no access to halfway decent medical care, and basically go to bed hungry every night. So this is actually 2/3 of the world almost now that we have all these billions of people. This is the biggest part of the world today is living not just in, like we think of poverty as the poverty line determined by the government, which they may say, oh, you need $1,000. And if you don't have $1,000 a month, then you're living below the poverty line. And that to us here in the West is poverty, right? We don't even know the meaning of poverty. Poverty is when you not just don't have $1,000 a month, you don't have $10 a month. You don't have $5 a month. You never have actual money. And all that you ever get to eat is what some kind person gives you. And all the clothes you ever get to wear is what some kind person gives you. And there aren't that many kind people in the world, believe me. I've lived and worked in other locations where real poverty existed. And we don't even know the meaning of the word. But it is coming. Many of us will experience it. There are thousands out there like me, for instance, who are unvaccinated from the COVID jab. I will not do that vaccination. But because I have not had that put into my system, I probably will not pass the test when it comes to eye test or thumb test or fingerprint test, which comes in with credit banking. And the banks are already turning over 19th of December and September, I understand. Wells Fargo declared Chapter 11 and reorganization of many of its branches because it's turning over to this credit system. When that comes in, you will probably only be able to access that funding if you have had your COVID jab. And so the thousands like me, we won't even be able to access our own money in the bank anymore. I'm really anticipating that is very likely to happen. When it comes to savings accounts, we've already seen it happen across the whole of China. The whole of China, the Chinese government, declared all money in savings accounts, not checking, but savings accounts, as being investments in the bank and no longer accessible to the customers. You can't access your savings anymore in China. So essentially, the government's taken it. And they will very likely do something similar here. It's very much on the cards that these banking institutions will institute something like that because they're all in big trouble financially. The insurance companies are going broke because people are dying at unprecedented rates, not just in America, but around the world. If you notice, you're not hearing anything more very much or very often about COVID on the news. They're not mentioning it 24 hours a day like they were because they have got what they call a critical mass already vaccinated. They've already got their drugs into a critical mass of people. So the rest, like me, they're they're just writing off. They're not caring about. But we are the ones that be the first ones to be shut out of the system and got rid of, I'm sure. And then the next group will be the seniors who are too old to do productive work that the government wants them to do. They will be the next group. They have started thinning out the children massively by taking the jabs down to 6 months old, and kids are dying. Teenage children are dying in unprecedented numbers today. And these numbers are easily checked with the World Health, with the CDC, with your government accounting offices. All these numbers are out there available for anybody to check. So we're in a pretty bad state at the moment. The globalists have presently got control. Of course, I know they won't win in the end, but it's going to be a hard road to get it sorted out. Like that man said, Dr. Greer said, we're in a tough spot right now, and getting humans and the human race on this planet sorted out and back on track, there's going to be a lot of infighting before that happens.
But
it's
Dr.
going to be
Greer,
a rough 4 or 5
sure.
years.
But Dr. Greer, he's on the stump, but he's out there. Again, the disclosureproject.com. So I would want people to visit his website and look at what he's doing in terms of his fight. And listen, he says it like this.
This section of the briefing is regarding secrecy, how secrecy works, how have these projects worked. Some years ago, a military advisor of mine explained to me something called an unacknowledged special access project, or USAP. This is a project which, while compartmented and which requires special access, is also unacknowledged. And what that means is that no one outside of that compartmented area of operation is told about it. And it doesn't matter if the person is the President of the United States, the head of intelligence, or the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. I have, over the past 8 years, had the responsibility, unwelcome, I might add, on my part, of having to brief a sitting CIA director on this issue, a sitting head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, an admiral who headed up the J2 position, the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as well as other senior people within the Congress, the Senate, the United Nations, and foreign governments. I have found that for the most part, these high officials have known nothing about these compartmented special access projects, which are unacknowledged and which deal with this issue.
The secret government, that's what it is.
Yes.
Again, let me just, I want people to do a little homework. Punch up Dr. Greer and the event he had at the National Press Club in Washington in 2002, 2001, somewhere around there. It was the largest viewed press conference, if you will, that anybody had held up until that point and since that time. And he had 500 people at that conference in Washington, D.C., all of whom had come from various countries from around the world, elected officials, government officials, CIA, FBI, et cetera, at that conference to say that UFOs were here and we have been charged with the responsibility of keeping the secret among ourselves rather than sharing with the masses of people here on Earth.
A government is widespread, as everybody knows. I mean, it's into everybody's pockets and everybody's life all over the place, and the same thing holds true for the UFO, extraterrestrial, if you want to look at it that way. But very, very few people really know the full knowledge of what's going on. It's held very tightly within black covert operations. They keep pretty much each organization and island them to itself. You don't have cross departmentalization a lot within the programs. TRW, Johnson Controls, Honeywell, all of them at some point or another became involved with the intelligence field. Certain works, some of Phil Corso's early back engineering projects, if you will look into those. Atlantic Research was one of them, way back. Entities that were created out of people in the Pentagon to become a quote-unquote Beltway bandit, received projects, grants, and monies to do certain projects that were so highly classified, even, you know, there was only a top secret, but so compartmentalized that, you know, only about four people would know what was going on. But as far as UFO and intelligence and extraterrestrial goes, it's right at the top. And I would say that the president has such limited knowledge of it. I know Carter did not have any knowledge whatsoever. And I worked right there with the organization, President Carter's organization. This is
Yeah, these are the real deals in the background. Having that kind of information and keeping the secret close to the chest because they had to. So how would you wrap this whole thing up if we were talking about the secret government of the United States? Go ahead.
Okay. I would like to say this before you close the show, Russell, that today we have talked almost exclusively about the UFO phenomena and the governments and how it's gone on throughout ages, right? That's been our focus. But there is something, because I'm sure a lot of people will say, but what can I do about this? This is so far outside my scope, you know, admirals, generals, presidents, governments. It's so far out of my normal life. What can I do about it? Well, maybe next time you and I have a conversation, the conversation can focus on that. Today, we touched briefly on frequency and frequency medicine, right? And so next time you and I have a conversation, perhaps we can focus on this whole idea of what that means to us in relation of how we can respond as individuals with no political connections and no access to any of these great men of the moment, how we can do something to benefit ourselves in the face of all this that is going on. Because there is a very important message to be brought out about that. And I would like it if we could talk about it next time.
Man, that'd be solutions to the problem. Yeah, that's what we need. I mean, we need people to start thinking about what can I do? What little bit can I do?
Yes.
To change the things.
What can I do?
Okay.
Yes. And I'd like us to talk about that.
Okay.
I find these conversations like we've had, I find them interesting because I'm interested in the whole subject matter, but I also find them somewhat not boring, more distracting. It's as if all this is a huge distraction right now, and there are more important things for us to be focused on. And that's what I would like us to talk about, the more important things.
Okay, not a problem. I just want to say that I brought this out in this fashion because I would suggest 80% of the people on planet Earth, maybe 90%, they don't have this information. They don't have a clue. They haven't done this research that these guys have done, like George and you have
done.
It's
true.
So
it's true. And it's good information, and it needs to be got out there. And I hope that they will go on computers and read or listen to Dr. Greer and all these other wonderful people, Clifford Stone, and read Dr. Thompson's books and so on. I would love it if everybody would do that. But still, when they have done all that, it still doesn't tell them what they can do as an individual for themselves. And that's something I would like us to talk about, if we may.
Oh, the next program, then that's what we're talking about, the solutions to the problems as we see them. No matter who you are, where you are, or what position you hold in or out of the government. So that's excellent. So Dr. Greer, wrapping up, saying this.
In order for our civilization to move forward significantly, we're going to have something better than solar panels and windmills. And the good news is we have it. The bad news is there are sociopaths who are in super secret projects that don't want us to have it. And our civilization has been greatly harmed, not to mention our environment and biosphere. So a lot of people think this is about aliens. I said, no, it's not about ETs. It's about humans and how are humans going to get out of the conundrum we're in, which is a very serious problem, and move forward as a civilization instead of sliding backwards.
Yeah. Take a minute and talk about the crisis in the UK, in England, France. They don't even have enough resources to keep warm this winter, right? Yes.
Their energy crisis. Well, you know, to me, in the UK, of course, they have nuclear power plants, and the UK is not desperately short of energy. The UK are short of is high enough wages to pay for it, because the utilities in the United Kingdom have always been extraordinarily high. You know, it's a very small island. It's only as big as the state of Montana. In fact, it's Great Britain, England, Scotland, and Wales, excluding Northern Ireland. England, Scotland, and Wales is almost exactly the same size as the state of Montana, 96,200 square miles, right? In Montana, we have barely 1 million people. In England, years ago, they had 70 million. I don't know how many they've got now, but it's very densely populated and very low resources to produce materials for all those people. But they're not short of any energy. It's just that the cost of it is very high. So you can exclude the problems for England. That's a monetary thing, not an energy thing. Europe's problem is that they don't have enough production of energy entirely for themselves, and it's mostly Northern Europe. France has some of those giant salination plants that use the tides, the coming in and out of the coast, to generate power. So they have those, and they have nuclear power plants. France itself as a country, particularly Southern France, is not really in desperate need. Northern France, and particularly Germany and north of there, Poland, Austria, these countries, these are the ones that are going to suffer from a very hard winter, because their main fuel source is gas. And their gas comes from the Russian gas fields in the Caucasus. So I can only say that it is the stupidity of their governments that have brought about this crisis and nothing else. If you live in a house and your water comes from your next door neighbor's well, you don't go out and start having a row with your neighbor. You try to talk nice to that neighbor so your water will keep flowing. Well, they thought they could just treat Mr. Putin, who is, after all, the head of a major country in this world, right? A country equally as powerful as the United States. Let us not forget that, right? And the European Union just have said terrible things to him, about him, being entirely abusive, and would not listen to him at all over the issue of Ukraine. That whole issue, which is not just a new thing, it's gone on for 20 years now, at least, I should think. Certainly the last 14 or 15 years, and probably before that, right? And the Europeans would not listen to any of the arguments that the Russian government was presenting to them. And they simply got abusive over the whole Ukraine issue and did a lot of stupid things, like they sent in tanks, and the tanks are too heavy to cross the bridges. The Ukraine doesn't have the infrastructure to carry those tanks. So the tanks from Germany are useless. They go right through the bridge. The Europeans have behaved entirely stupidly, no matter how you look at what they have done and their involvement in the Ukraine issue. And as a result of that, they're going to suffer this winter because Putin is limiting the gas. All I could say about that is that they're darn lucky that he didn't cut it off altogether, because if he cut it off altogether, they would be in real trouble in Europe. So, you know, I don't blame Putin. I blame the stupidity of the European Council. And that same council is producing the woman who is now out on the platform calling for a vote to make COVID jabs compulsory throughout Europe. If you want to see how the global government works, look at the EU. Bad news for everybody who lives there right now. And it's their own fault.
All right. We will talk about solutions next time. So, but I appreciate you. Thank you very much for being here today on this Saturday afternoon. This is Saturday, the 30th day.
No, it's Friday. It's Friday.
Oh, Friday. I'm sorry. I thought it was, okay, it's Friday.
We get so carried. We're so carried away with extraterrestrials, we don't know what day it is anymore, Russell. I'm with you on that.
I keep losing count. Okay. Well, thank you very much for being with us and sharing the information.
Thank you.
So
it's always a pleasure.
And so talk to you next time. Okay, have a good one.
Bye-bye. Bye now.